Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It was over 50 years ago that Dr. Jane Goodall began her now legendary fieldwork with the chimpanzees at Gombe Stream National Park in Tanzania. It was through her that we learned that humans are not the only ones who make and use tools. Chimps do it too, and that complicated social dynamics are not limited to humans either. Her advocacy work continues through the Jane Goodall Institute and through her Roots and Shoots program, an organization for environmental awareness in over 120 countries, led by youth. She is now the subject of a documentary about her life called Jane's Journey, and she joins me now to talk about her work and this new film. Welcome to WNYC, Jane Goodall. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Do you remember what your first day was like in the jungle?
Yes, I actually do. It was very daunting because I didn't see a chimpanzee at all. The slopes are very steep, and it was the dry season, so they were skiddy. And I just remember thinking, will I ever find the chimps? But then I was climbing up by myself, and I got to a little flat space overlooking Lake Tanganyika, and there was this glorious smell because there'd been a little rain shower, and a mourning dove was cooing, and a baboon barked, and I thought, this is absolutely so fantastic. I could not believe it was me.
Your findings at Gombe are best known, I guess, for establishing that chimpanzees are not vegetarians and that humans are not the only animals who can make and use tools, because you observed chimps using tools as well. And you wrote that human beings are not the only ones with personality. You said you observed chimps engaging in rational thought, displaying emotions like joy and sorrow, and forming affectionate bonds like humans do. How do you know? It's hard enough to know what other people are thinking. How do you know what other animals are thinking?
You can't really tell, but especially if watching, for example, a young human child and a young chimpanzee child, and when our human child is spinning around and smiling and hugging people and clearly filled with the joy of life, well, a young chimp in the same situation does exactly the same kind of thing. And when you see a human child very sad and with a sorrowful face, you know they're sad, and a little chimp behaves in exactly the same way. So we only infer that they have emotions similar to ours, but everybody who's worked with chimpanzees believes it.
Pet owners do this all the time with their dogs, right? But they surmise that their dogs are thinking something or feeling something. I know that you had a dog early on, I think before you worked with the chimps. And do you see them similarly in that respect?
Well, it was my dog, Rusty, who actually taught me that animals have personalities, minds, and feelings. And I don't think anyone can share their life with any kind of animal with a reasonably well-developed brain that doesn't share the same complete conviction. And chimpanzees, the brain, the anatomy of the brain, is just about identical to ours. It's just that ours is bigger. And the chimpanzee's DNA, the structure of DNA, differs from ours by only just over 1%. So it doesn't make sense to think that suddenly, in all ways, regarding intellect and emotion, we would be different from the other animals.
Monica in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Jane Goodall. Hi, Monica.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Jane, my question for you is, in light of all this research, what would be your definition of a human?
Well, there's hundreds of different definitions of humans, but if we twist the question around a bit and say, okay, we have so many similarities with chimpanzees and the other apes, so what is it that's different? And for me, it's always the fact that we, and as far as we know, only we, have developed this very complex way of communication, which is our words. Our words can be spoken, as they have been for thousands of years. They can be written, they can be electronic. But with these words, we can talk about the past, we can plan the distant future, we can have discussions and bring people with different life experiences to the table to solve a problem. And I think, personally, this is what's led to the extraordinary development of our intellect.
Thank you, Monica. Rebecca in Toronto, you're on WNYC with Jane Goodall. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I just wanted to tell her that she's been my hero for over 40 years, that I always loved chimps, and for my 10th birthday, my parents gave me her book, which I read cover to cover multiple times. I actually, for my 12th birthday, I got a squirrel monkey. For my 16th, another one. And she just has been an inspiration for years. And I just wanted to tell her how much we've all benefited from her work and respect her for her work.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to hear.
Rebecca, thank you very much. I want to ask you about parenting, because you raised your son on the Serengeti, and I understand his nickname was Shrub.
No, it's Grub. Grub. Not Shrub, Grub. He's still called Grub by everybody.
I guess Shrub is the nickname of our president. Is there, the last one, is there something about chimpanzees which taught you or which can teach anyone else about caring for young? Are chimps good mothers and fathers?
Well, there's good mothers and bad mothers. Until recently, we didn't even know who the fathers were, and we could only tell by collecting a little sample of poo and sending it off for a DNA profiling. Basically, the males act as fathers to all the infants in the community, protect them if necessary. But the good mother is one who is patient, protective, but not overprotective. She's affectionate, she's playful, and above all, she's supportive. And there aren't many bad mothers. There's a lot of kind of mediocre ones. But definitely the offspring of the good mothers go on to become significant in their community. The mothers are more productive, and the males tend to get a higher social position.
You do also, you did also observe, I guess it took you 10 years of being there before you saw the darker side of dominant female chimp behavior, where they would go so far as to cannibalize the children of other mother chimps in order to maintain their dominant position. Do I have that right?
Well, not entirely. We don't know. You know, it's very rare. There have been one chimpanzee mother with her adolescent daughter, Passion and Pom, who possibly were responsible for the deaths of 10 other infants newborn in the community. It's only within the first couple of days that this behavior happens, of the first couple of days of the new baby. It seems to be only if a mother has the support of an adolescent daughter that she's capable of doing this. And then we've seen the same behavior just twice more with one other female. But it's incredibly rare. What happens all the time is groups of males patrolling the boundaries of their territories, and if they see a stranger that's from a neighboring community, particularly if that's a female, they may give chase and leave the victim to die of wounds inflicted. Also, a sort of what I call the four-year war broke out when males of a larger community systematically attacked individuals of the smaller breakaway community. And this dark side of chimp nature was a real shock to me. You know, we have a dark side too, and so do they. But too, they can show love, compassion, and altruism, as can we.
Did you first want to study chimps or any non-human species in the wild because you think they thought they would be somehow nicer than us?
No, I just, from the tiniest age, I loved animals, apparently even before I could talk. I would crawl around looking at, you know, little insects and things. And this passion grew, and I had a very, very supportive mother. Again, we come back to the importance of mothering behavior, which I think is, in the first 2 years, really, really important. And then I began reading books. I was, first of all, Dr. Doolittle. And then, of course, I read the books about Tarzan and fell passionately in love and was really jealous when he married that other silly, wimpy Jane.
Another Tarzan and Jane story.
Well, a real one, yes.
On Kit in Edison, you're on WNYC with Jane Goodall.
Hi. First of all, it's a true honor to meet someone that is really, you know, passionate but has stuck to their core from beginning to end. Many people, as they become successful, kind of lose that edge. But knowing what you know now and all the research that's been done, you know, as a primatologist and as other experts have have come about. What is the next breakthrough, or where is the future in this, or where are we headed as far as that? It's very good for animal conservation, and you know, it's very good to have all of this. But what's the next thing, or what can this help us now through all this research?
Well, you know, the great bulk of Gombe data, 50 years, is now stored at Duke University, and there are many students working on it. And I think we still have a lot to learn from these long-term records, so you can follow through the case histories of mothers and their offspring and their grandchildren. I think we're going to learn a lot from that. Also, as scientists publish more and it's easier to compare behavior of chimps in different parts of their range, they have different cultures, different behaviors that are passed on. But of course, the urgent thing now is conservation, because if we can't do a better job than we're doing, then our grandchildren, there'll be no wild chimps left to study. So this is the urgent thing. And what became abundantly clear, if we don't improve the lives of people living in abject poverty around the last wilderness areas, the last big forests, then we'll never, ever conserve the animals in those wilderness areas, because people will just desperately have to move in to find a bit more land, to grow a few more crops, you know, and things like this. So one of our biggest programs is working with the local people, and it's very successful.
Ann Kidd, thank you for your call. We just have a couple of minutes left with Jane Goodall, and we'll tell you again about her event tonight that you can see in movie theaters all over our area. Live event being transmitted into the movie theaters like those Met operas. You're famous for saying hello in chimpanzee to start out your presentations. Here's a clip of you doing just that. How do you know that's hello?
Well, it's actually it's called the pantoot, and a chimpanzee will come up onto a ridge, stand there, and basically that call is advertising, this is me, and then he listens, is anybody else out there? And when if he gets a reply, he or she is going to make a decision, do I go and join that other, do I reply, do I keep quiet, do I run away?
Can you think of anything else to say in chimpanzee?
Well, I mean, I can. Which is a lost child or a child who's been prevented from suckling. Or I could go, which is a close up greeting, the kind that you make when you're embracing another.
It's beautiful. I know you got to go. What do you think people will walk away with after seeing the documentary, Jane's Journey, or what do you want them to walk away with?
Well, I hope that people walk away with the kind of feelings that the film has aroused. It was made by a German film team, been playing in Germany for quite a long time. It's won awards and things. And typically people are coming out of the movie theater saying, I know I have to do more for the planet. Because the film is very much about the journey beyond the chimpanzees into, gosh, if we don't save these forests and these amazing chimpanzees and all the other extraordinary wildlife, what's going to be left for our children? Which is why I started this youth program, Roots and Shoots.
Well, thank you for doing this preview with us. I'm sure you can't be going on radio stations all around the country and all around the world all day today and doing this. So I really, really appreciate your time. I'm sure you felt the love from our callers, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me onto your show.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and coming up next on this Thanksgiving Day, how a pile of lost report cards offered a glimpse into the New York past.